ready to get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Hi, welcome to this week's episode of the Niche Website Builder podcast and YouTube channel. I've got an amazing guest with us this week. His name is Craig Campbell. Not a new name. I'm sure pretty much all of you would have heard of Craig at some point. He's been working online pretty much in every space you can think of since the internet started. I literally asked him how he made his first dollar online, and he basically said he's been working online since the start of the internet, which... So that's how long he's been in the space. We cover some great topics today, some of which have blown my mind a little bit. We start by hearing his experience of running his agency and then closing it down. And then we also talk in quite a lot of depth, actually, about some of the black hat methods that he's used in the past, some of the more creative ways he's made money online. And then we also talk about expired domains and also how he owns a famous UK politician's domain, what he's done with it, and the story behind that. So I'm sure you're going to love this week's episode. Let us know in the comments, and let's get into it.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show, and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
Hey, Craig, welcome to the show. How's things?
All good, Adam. Can't complain. Enjoying the sunny weather here in Scotland, so no complaints mind. How are things your end?
It's good. It's good. We were just chatting before we press record about the restrictions and, you know, all things like that. But it's funny, we've come full circle, because about 2 years ago, I think, I was on your podcast, and I think you were one of the first people I ever did a podcast with, I think.
Yeah.
Now you're on our podcast, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's always good to do the full circle. But yeah, I think obviously because of what you do, in terms of affiliate and stuff like that, and I just didn't want to, on my podcast, do the same old stuff. I wanted to talk about affiliate. I wanted to talk to guys that were, you know, under the radar, so to speak, doing it, rather than, you know, the usual people who claim they're affiliate superstars and they're, you know, they're not or whatever. So it was good to have you on, and got a lot of good feedback from that podcast. I think a lot of people really liked what you had to say, and it's always good to talk to successful people. So yeah, that was good.
Awesome. Well, I'm sure pretty much all of our audience would have heard of you. You're obviously a big name in the space, but can you tell us a little bit about yourself, like about your background and your history? And I know we'll get into it a little bit, but you've done a bit of everything, but just tell us a little bit about, you know, who is Craig? What are you doing today? Like, how did you get here?
So I've been in the industry for nearly 20 years now. Started out as a really, really bad web designer back in the day. Don't ask me why I entered. I just fancied online because the internet was a new thing. After a while, I decided that I was really just quite bad at web design, and started to look into the marketing side of it, and just cut my teeth learning on forums, playing around with badly designed websites by me. You know, back then there was no Facebook, YouTube, anything like that at all. It was all kind of forums and books and all that kind of stuff. I just started to really enjoy that side of things. And then, you know, I'm a kind of gadget guy. So then, you know, tools came out and, you know, spam and all that kind of stuff, which worked really well back in the day. And it was just really easy, really simple. And you're just like, you know, pinching yourself going, fucking hell, man, I'm making money. I can rank websites. And, you know, people were mind blown that you could do it. So started doing that. And I worked as a freelancer from home for probably, you know, 3-4 years. I can't remember exactly how long it was. It was just a kind of blur now. But, yeah, 3-4 years just charging people to rank their websites and found it quite easy. And then before I knew it, I needed more content writers. I needed a sales guy and all that stuff. So before I knew it, I started to build an agency. So, you know, the first two people I hired was a content writer. Well, I'll go back a little bit. So it blew my brains working from home for the 3-4 years that I was working from home. I became quite lazy. Well, you know, I was a big Jeremy Kyle fan and all that stuff. And I'd be like, yeah, I watch Jeremy Kyle, then I'll do my work. And before I knew it, I was on the back foot all the time, slobbing around as we do. So I decided to get this crappy little office, really cheap, just down the road from me. It sat like two people. And I got that. And when my wife was a nursery teacher at the time, and I used to drop her off at work and go to the office, do my work, then I'd go and pick her up from work after it. And that was kind of my work routine. So I was up and I had things to do, like go drop her off, pick her up, go and do my work and try and cram it all in. And that was a bit more productive for me. I then, as I say, needed a sales guy and a content writer. And I crammed three of us into this really small office, which would have fitted two people at best. Could smell each other's breaths and all that kind of stuff. It was a dingy office, but it was great to get out, just talk to people again and all that kind of stuff. And we were in a kind of business centre, and there was loads of other businesses, so we pretty much cleaned up in there in terms of doing people's websites and their SEO. So that really started to build the business. Then we had to get more content writers, a web designer, and so on. Before I knew it, I kind of had this agency, and I wasn't intending to do that. I just wanted out the house. Before I knew it, I had an agency which I built up over a 9-year period. I had 17 staff at one point. You know, I kept expanding offices. And basically, the biggest fault on that whole process was I wasn't a business, you know, educated guy, didn't go to business school, none of this kind of stuff. And before I knew it, I was working in my business and not on my business. So everything was coming through me. I didn't trust the sales guy enough to do the invoicing. I didn't trust anyone really to do anything. So it became a really stressful thing. And I ended up suffering from anxiety, which I had to get medication for, because I basically worked myself into the ground. I was working like 15, 16, 17 hour shifts, like constantly for years, trying to grow and all that kind of stuff. And I just wasn't doing anything smartly. And it just kind of, you know, the wheels started to fall off of that model, because I stupidly had this ego where everything had to run through me. I was the boss, had to be done my way. I wouldn't delegate nothing. I didn't trust anyone, blah, 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 blah. And I've got my reasons for not trusting people. You know, I had people that you know, I trained up and then they buggered off and started up on their own. So I was like, no, I need to, you know, it was difficult, and I'm pretty sure we can all relate to that. You know, train someone up, give them too much information, they end up your competition. So I've had that several times, and that's why I was the way I was. But it came to a halt. You know, I became pretty stressed out and decided something has to change. And I was a big fan of Matthew Woodward, used to read a lot of his stuff, and I seen the life he was having, traveling the world. Making affiliate money, you know, from promoting tools and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, what the hell are you doing? Because it becomes a big ego thing when you've got 17 staff and you think you're the big agency owner and all that stuff. The only fool is you. You know, it's all right saying I've got a high turnover, but I used to be scared on if a guy didn't pay, that how would I be able to pay the staff on a Friday and all that kind of stuff. It's scary stuff. And, you know, there's only one fool in all of that. You know, I wasn't earning that much money. It was a high turnover thing, but very low profit. And it was just a foolish game. Seen Matthew, obviously massively envious of the affiliate side of things. Now, of course, I would have considered myself a fairly experienced SEO. I've considered myself very good at SEO, but I didn't really know that much about affiliate marketing. So I started to play around with it and done the odd thing with SEMrush and various other people, started to make a few quid, then looked at Amazon websites and all that, and I'm like, fuck. But in between all of that, I had a guy, and we were doing this dentist, and the guy had five practices. We'd done some great local SEO for him, and the guy came to me one day and said, Craig, can you come in and see me? Went in to see him, they went, really love the job you're doing and all that kind of stuff, you've done really well. He says, I'm selling up. He says, I'm going to retire. The guy was 31 years old, and he said, I've had enough. He says, I'm going to sell up. I've been made a great offer, and I want to spend more time with my family. He says, I will recommend that the other people keep you on, but he says, you're the biggest fool in the world. And I said, why is that? And he says to me, because you've made me millions of pounds, and you're still working like a dog. And that really triggered something in my head. Where he said to me, Craig, you've got amazing skills. You need to find a product or a service that you can rank for yourself and not like client work and all that kind of stuff. And so after that, you know, I tried e-cigs, I tried selling women's clothing, and there was failures within that. And I think I've spoken about them in several other podcasts and at several conferences. E-cig business, again, I was an impulsive guy, desperate to get away from client work. Jumped into the e-cig business, ranked the website, done everything, then found out there was hundreds of red tape. We couldn't do Facebook ads, couldn't do Google ads because it's nicotine. PayPal were the only people who take payments. The dropshipper was a joke. So that, you know, that business model was thrown in the bin. We'd done women's clothing. The amount of returns that were coming in was just eating into the profit because it was high volume, low margin, and it just didn't work out because people like my wife buy three or two of the same thing and try and see what one fits best and then sends the other one back, and that's costing me money. So the business models, again, weren't right. That's when you start to look at Amazon and try and pass that, you know, holding the items, delivering the items, and you know, doing that type of affiliate. So tried everything and anything and ended up just, I've got my own e-commerce stores, which are well-refined, and they're digital downloads, because I didn't want to get things lost in the post and all that kind of garbage. So I've tried everything, and that's just a condensed version. You know, I've been robbed, I didn't have processes, I had a massive ego and wouldn't delegate and didn't understand using people, you know, outsourcing work to people with countries with a lower cost of living, didn't utilize any of that stuff, and, you know, made a whole bunch of mistakes before I kind of finally got it right. So I've been in an industry a long time. I wouldn't say I've been successful in the industry for a long, long time. So probably a 15-year apprenticeship before I started making money. So I've been the longest apprentice in the world. What you could do in about 3-4 years. Took me 15 years to figure it all out. So, it was painful, man. Real painful.
I think that's a great story, though. And it just goes to show that it's, you know, people talk about, you know, this online stuff as being passive and easy and, you know, in 6 months, I'm going to give up my job and this is what I'm going to do. But it's not. It's hard work. And, I mean, everything you've just said is testament to how much hard work you put in over those 15 years to build up to the point where you've been successful.
So yeah.
Is that how you made your first like dollar online, was through the agency, or was it, did you make money online before that? Because there's always that light bulb moment where you make your first dollar online and think, oh shit, like I can actually make money on the internet without leaving my bedroom or whatever.
Yeah.
How did you make that first dollar?
So back in the day, it was websites. You know, I was, you know, I thought I was the king of all web designers. And I was just selling websites to local businesses for peanuts, still making money though. And then the website owners would ask you, like, what else can you do? Can you do this? Can you get me leads? And, you know, you would go on Gumtree and try and drive traffic and you know, all the shit of the day. So you kind of still could call it SEO or marketing or whatever you want. You're just trying to drive traffic to the website through forums and everything else as well. So that was, websites would have been the first money I made online. Now, the reason I didn't make money before it was because the internet wasn't a thing, really. You know, I probably got the internet in my house in about 1997, 1998. So I would have been, I'm 41 now. I was born in 1980. So I was like 17, 18, and I was in dead end jobs and sales jobs, call center jobs and all that crap. And, you know, the minute you get the internet in the house, the old dial-up connection, and you're on MSN talking to girls and, you know, all of that kind of stuff, you know, you're just like, man, the internet's a real cool place to be on there looking at my house in Google Earth and, you know, all these kind of crazy things. And kind of really liked the internet. And while I hated my jobs, I'm like, websites and, you know, I was just transfixed by the internet. So I couldn't have made money earlier on the internet because I didn't have the internet. It was a very new thing. And that's what I put a lot of, you know, people say to me, why did you choose SEO? Why did you choose this? It was just by pure luck, really. Yeah. You know, because of my age, because the internet just came out and, you know, you're sitting on the internet talking to girls at night on MSN and then browsing the web and, you know, looking at, what was the, oh man, I can't remember the name of the website. There was this horrible website where you used to look at, and I don't ask me why, but you used to look at these kind of horror things, like people getting hit by like cars and stuff, and you would see the mangled body. Was it rotten.com? Or did you never remember that?
Rotten.com. I remember it's really that, bad. Yeah.
Proper creepy, gory stuff.
And stuff, yeah.
So I'm not even sure if rotten.com's still a thing. I've not looked because I don't really like blood and guts, but back then you were just looking at stuff and you're like, oh man, look at this. And so, you know, That was my first few quid. Robbing people blind. Well, I wasn't robbing, I was doing it for peanuts, but there were really bad websites. And there was a point where I just went, this is no good. It's taken me far too long to knock up very, very basic websites and try to understand graphics. And even to this day, I am still really bad with graphics and stuff. So, yeah, just something that never sunk in properly for me. So I was never going to make a great web designer.
One of the key skills of a web designer is good at graphics. And it's like, you're not good at graphics. So.
You're dead, yeah. You can make a very average website look really good with good graphics. But, yeah. I tried. Was never good, man.
Cool. So, it sounds like you've done everything. You speak at events. You've done a lot of that. You run your own agency. You run your own websites. You've got a crazy YouTube channel right now. I think it's 73,000 subscribers, like over 3 million views. And you haven't been running that channel for very long, right? It's been, I mean, that growth has been a relatively short period of time.
Yeah, that was start of COVID. As you mentioned, I spoke at a lot of events previously. And because COVID hit and everyone was bored in their house and they weren't allowed to go out and all that stuff, I'm just like, what the hell am I going to do? And, you know, there was guys on there doing Zoom calls and on kind of Corona Pub. There was a thing called the Corona Pub or the Corona Arms or something. Hopped in there a few times and people used to do just random Zoom meetups just for a few beers, just chatting SEO stuff and all that. And I thought, man, got to do something useful with my time. And I had paid courses that I had, so I started to put them out on YouTube. And I actually gave away a course for free and I got 50,000 sign-ups. Very, very quickly. And that was on a platform called Thinkific, but then I used that to try and drive people over to my YouTube. And I just gave away a lot of tutorials and stuff, and then got Chris Palmer and various other people on doing, you know, regular, just because we were bored and we were talking off, like, not on YouTube, but we're talking anyway. I'm like, why don't we go on and answer people's questions and do something? And it went really well. We still do them to this day. And I think, you know, when you're speaking at conferences, you know, you're trying to give back to the community and give bits and bobs away. But there's also that element where people have got really basic questions to ask. So we try and do two kind of live Q&A sessions a week, which are still ongoing and people are still finding value in them. So as long as people are finding value in them, I'll continue to do them, because I think, you know, building up a YouTube channel, it's another way of driving traffic and building your personal brand and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's worked really well and it's been probably 15, 16 months where, don't get me wrong, if you go to something like Social Blade, you'll see that my YouTube channel has been up since 2016, just because I built my personal brand in 2016. And I had a YouTube channel as part of that, but I never really posted anything at all until March 2020. So yeah, it's been good growth and, you know, great figures. It's kind of stagnating now. People say it's, you know, people always say to me, you know, Neil Patel's get 700,000 and Brian Dean's get 500,000 or whatever. I think those numbers are really, really hard to achieve now in this day and age. And they guys have a massive following, and I'm, you know, but I'm more of an SEO, very specific SEO guy. A lot of my stuff there. So I think the numbers I've got are pretty good in terms of SEO only content, but I'm going to try and branch out because I've got a lot of experience in all other things. So I'm going to try and make it a bit more of a digital marketing channel. That's the next step. Because I'd love to break the 100,000 barrier, but I'm not sure whether that's possible or not. And I've always been reluctant. People say, just buy the extra and do this and do that. But when you've done it the hard way, you know, you don't want to then cheat to get over the line. But I really want that YouTube plaque. And you get for 100,000 subscribers. I've got 600 videos on there, and it's been a hard slog, but I just wanted to use my COVID time wisely and, again, just build, you know, the personal brand up and obviously try and help people at the same time.
Yeah, I think it's great. And I think those numbers are awesome, like, considering the time it's been. We put a link to Craig's channel, so, like, please go and subscribe and be helping get to the 100,000. But not just for that. I mean, just go and watch some of the content. We'll talk a little bit about some of it like later on today. But I think the content you put out is great, Craig. So I don't see you having any problems getting past the 100,000. To be fair, it's just a matter of time.
Matter of time, yeah.
Yeah. What's of all those different ways that you've made money, and it's, you've done everything, what's been your most favourite way of making money online?
Oh, man. Favourite? So I'm probably going to get heckled for saying some of this stuff, but I'm quite a devious guy, not in a kind of bad way or whatever, but you know that way you do something that you shouldn't be doing and you get you make money from it and you just get a little thrill out of it? So obviously I've made money doing SEO, doing affiliate and everything else, but some of the kind of other stuff that I've done, and I'll give you a couple of examples. I've done a few sneaky things in the past where I've done some cloaking on Bing ads, for example. And obviously Bing ads, even to this day, you can use a mismatched URL. So on Google, you can't. Now, on Bing ads, you used to be able to do paid ads on, it was hotels that I used to do it on. So I would bid on like the Hilton in Glasgow. Now, I didn't actually do it in the Hilton in Glasgow, but anyway, that's just an example. Bid on the Hilton in Glasgow and it would have like the Hilton.com, but the actual URL would be my affiliate website, which would then redirect back onto the Hilton in Glasgow. So I was just being a middleman.
There wasn't even any website, it was literally just a redirect.
Yeah. So just the scripts that you had and boom, and that put them back onto the Hilton, but you would get credited as an affiliate. And the reason you were doing that in Bing, there wasn't serious volume, but the cost was so low. So, you know, it cost you a few pence per click and you were getting commission, bang, bang, bang. So obviously doing that is pretty shady, but it still works to this day and you could make a lot of money just bidding on brands. I used to also have a website which used to rank for a whole bunch of like Vodafone customer service phone number. So what I've done here was all I was competing with was like Vodafone's contact page, which had little to no content on it. So I used to rank for like Vodafone, Bank of Scotland, Clydesdale Bank, all of the, everything you could ever get with customer service number at the end of it. And I'd have a premium number on that website. So I was being paid per minute for every phone call. So people would just Google it, and they would grab that number and they would think they were calling the Royal Bank of Scotland. Now they would be, because the number would redirect on to the real number. But obviously I again was being a middleman at that point. Ofcom by 2019 did make that a bit of a problem. You had to specifically say on your landing page, this is a premium rate number. Either that or you'll get into deep shit. So a lot of people used to do that. People say, oh, you fucking... I had a guy on my YouTube channel saying, I used to really like you until I seen that stuff. You know, what else have you done? Blah, 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 blah. I'm just playing with the internet and finding out what's possible and how to make money. And of course, there's a little bit of deviousness in there, and it's probably not right to do it, but I wanted to try it out. And you know, things like that, I would say, is the the favourite, just because of the thrill you get out of maybe getting money that you shouldn't have had. And it's easy. So you know what it's like doing client work? You work for your money. You know, I used to sell websites as part of the agency and all that stuff as well, and never made a profit in websites because there was always so many changes. How the hell do you price a web build? So hard, so bloody hard, unless you, you know, charge them a set fee then plus an hourly rate if they're going to mess you around or whatever. It's the only way you can make money doing it. So the favourite money is that easy money, and always, you know, where you're talking about easy money, there's always either a kind of cheating or a kind of scam going on. So just being the guy I am, I enjoyed that thoroughly. So, and it gives you another couple of these stories. Yeah.
But is that the most profitable kind of stuff that you've done over the years, or has there been other stuff which is maybe not as fun but more profitable?
To be honest, there's no such thing as easy work that gets you a lot of money. You know, it's not the most profitable by any stretch of the imagination. You know, my most profitable websites, I've got two e-commerce websites which make me the vast majority of my money. Now, I've had to work like an absolute dog over 5 years, and even just now, the overheads on that would make your eyes water. You know, they make money, but there's also a lot of overhead as well. So it's not the easiest money, you know, and you know yourself, with affiliate, doing anything, there's money that has to be spent and all that kind of stuff. People forget that part. There's no such thing as, you know, just whacking up a website and making all this kind of easy money. It does not happen. You know, you've got links, you've got content, you've got your technical stuff, you know, and whatever else you've got as part of your team. So I don't want to sit here and say there's easy, quick money. That's not the case. Everything that I've ever made money on has been a fairly hard slog, other than those kind of devious like cloaking and various other bits and bobs. So, you know, listen, there is easy ways to make money, and it's not necessarily doing SEO as such. You know, if you were going to do lead generation and just focus on GMBs or something, there's a lot of traffic and there's a lot of money you could make for doing relatively easy work. You know, you get a couple of processes there and boom, you know, you can rank a GMB quite easily. So it's up to you what you want to do. But for me, that model is fairly flawed because Google are always looking for ways to trip you up with GMBs. They change the goalposts and all that kind of stuff, which is why I've never heavily been into anything that's relatively short term. You know, I'm trying to think 2, 3, 4, 5 years ahead and trying to build a sustainable long-term business rather than, you know, jumping into GMBs, doing lead gen. You know, you could claim unverified GMBs, drive traffic, make money, sell leads, blah, 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 blah. That's all relatively easy and straightforward. But I like going to my bed at night knowing that I've still got an income coming in tomorrow. And if you use some of those sketchier tactics, you ain't got that. And a lot of people, you know, label me with this black hat thing. I like talking about black hat. I love playing with black hat. But there's a time and a place. I'm not going to do something that's going to risk my business or a client's business if I don't have to. Do you know what I mean? There's a time and a place for all of this stuff. And, you know, of course, I've done some bad things and stuff like that, but they've never been my long-term, you know, business models or anything like that. So you've got to play with the internet and see how far you can push the boundaries without breaking the law.
For sure. No, that's good. Well, it's interesting you mentioned the black hat stuff because I've got my next section is all to ask you about black hat stuff. So we can go over this bit quite quick, actually. So one of the things I wanted to ask was, what are some of the coolest black hat tricks that you've seen working? You just mentioned a couple, actually, about the premium numbers and the cloaking on Bing. Are they about the best you've seen, or like have you seen anything? Maybe you've not done it, but you've seen it and thought, like, wow, that's crazy.
I've seen a lot of stuff, to be fair. A lot of stuff not necessarily done by me, and some of the stuff's amazing. Just the creativity from people, you know, they find an exploit. Even things like I just said there, you know, hijacking unverified GMBs and just taking them off of people, switching the numbers out and switching the website out, doing that has been very, very profitable and literally made people billions of pounds for years and years and years over in America. You know, I've seen a lot of cloaking stuff. You know, the kind of premium number thing was also good. But there's millions, you know, that people have done over the years. I can't even think of the best one, but there's so many stories I could tell you. I don't want to tell too much in case I get anyone into trouble. You know, that's part of the thing as well. You know, I've seen black hat tricks. I'll give you one example here of something that's pretty naughty. You know, people used to, you know how on GMBs, for example, you could upload, so you can add a photo to anyone's GMB and you could literally upload a photo of that person's business and on Photoshop do a 0% overlay with a picture of a dildo or a cock or something like that and they upload that and then go and report it, you know, and the GMB will get wiped out. You know, and I don't want to talk about negative things, but there's so many loopholes within Google. There's also another trick, and it doesn't work any longer on GMB, where you used to be able to go in and suggest an edit. And if you said that that person's business wasn't open till like 2023, the GMB would go down until 2023. You know, that was literally it. There's so many flaws within Google, and how you monetize that's entirely up to yourself, or how you derail the competition is entirely up to yourself. But for me, it's not about derailing the competition, obviously, so I'm not going to talk any more about that. Yeah. But some of the ways that people have made money, you know, people have been, you know, they used to get custom tools and all that kind of stuff. So, for example, say you've got a website that I quite like the content that goes out on, I could literally get your RSS feed to ping me and steal your content, add it to my website and then send it to an indexing tool and I'm going to get all your content for nothing. There's so many little things that you could do if you wanted, you know, free content and free whatever. You just trample all over someone. Unless someone fully understands how this game works, then you could be robbed blind even by just doing something like that. I could literally, you could go and spend 10 grand in content and I could literally take it right off you. Get it indexed, boom. You know, all I need to do is sit and watch you. And that's it. You know, I could have your 10 grand worth of content all attributed to me because I'm getting the index faster and all that stuff. And, you know, all I need to do is get your RSS feed to ping me. You know, there's so many loopholes there that I've seen people do, and I'm not going to drop names or give too much more away because these things still work. and I don't want anyone getting rinsed, rotten, and then come back to you.
Whoever just indexes that content first in the eyes of Google is the true source. Is that is that how that one works? Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I think this stuff is crazy. Like, there's so many ways. People can think outside of the box. I guess creative thinking.
That's all it is. Creative thinking, and you know, I had it with a friend of mine, Gary Wilson. I don't mind dropping his name. He had a website once and he kept coming back and he was asking everyone, like, in our circle of friends for advice. He's like, none of this stuff's indexing. Like, what the hell's going on? And he got people to look at it from a technical point of view. And the technical guys like Daniel Cutteridge and everything were like, can't see anything at all wrong here with the fundamentals of your website. Like, and then Gary came to me and he went, all of these tech guys, no one's come up with it. And I looked at it and I ran it through Copyscape. And I'm like, dude, like, whoever's writing your content is stealing it from someone else's website. He's like, there's absolutely no chance. And before we knew it, someone was literally, you know, we reversed engineered it, tried a few other bits and bobs, and someone was literally stealing it from him. Yeah, and obviously you've got to then counteract that, and then his website started to rank and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, it's a crazy-ass world out there. But once you – this is the problem. It's not about, you know, everyone knowing you add content, you build links, you know, you make your site fast and fancy-looking and the right call to action. There's more to the internet than that. You know, there's these other things. And if you dig deep enough, there's always going to be a loophole where you can say – I'm having some of that, and that's where, you know, some devious people out there do really well and don't have to be content writers or whatever. So, yeah, it's all fun and games.
That's crazy. I know you're heavily involved in like link building, and you talk a lot about PBNs and like the darker side of link building. Do you still see a lot of that going on and working, like people with PBNs and what you consider, I guess, the more spammy side of link building, I guess, rather than the natural outreach kind of thing?
Yeah.
Do people still do that? Is this still a thing? And I guess, like with Google's latest link spam update, do you think it's still going to be a thing, or like, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, listen, PBNs have worked, still work, and probably always will work. Now, there's two different things that I would call a PBN. One, you've got a real shit PBN where someone's publicly selling garbage links on there, and, you know, it's got hundreds of thousands of outbound links, and you've got guys that have got really powerful websites that link out to a very few websites. They look like a real website. They're probably also doubled up as affiliate websites, AdSense websites, whatever. That's what I would call a real PBN, a real website with real traffic that's got a handful of links linking out to other sources. That's it. They're not publicly available for sale. Now, the way you need to look at this, and you will agree with this, Adam, I'm pretty sure, if you want a link from a website, you don't want one that you can go and get in people forever that's got hundreds of thousands of millions of links, and your link slapped on one page with five other guys and all that kind of stuff. Or a PBN, the other definition of a PBN, I could go and grab a DR50 tomorrow, slap up a website, grab some of the content, whatever, and it will sit at a DR50, but it's getting no traffic. Now, my question to anyone out there is, including yourself, Adam, if I've got a DR50 here that's got 300,000 hits a month, or I've got a DR50 here that gets no traffic, which one do you want a link from? Relatively straightforward answer. So, you know, there's different definitions of PBNs, different definitions of, bless me, different definitions of what work. So what most people call a PBN, you know, just slapping up some crap expired domain name, websites with no traffic, they're not treated like real websites, I wouldn't call that a real PBN. So that's where that word gets flung around, and that's where some people say PBNs don't move the needle. PBNs don't do this, don't do that, because they're probably in some shit-ass PBN. Now, getting a link from a website that ranks well, that has traffic, is going to move the needle. I don't care what anyone says. Do your own testing. Go try it out. That works. Yeah. And if you build up assets, you don't need to build 1,000 PBN links that are all DR50, blah, 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 blah.
No.
You know, a handful of links from powerful websites that get traffic is going to move the needle, and that works. And whilst Google reward links, then PBNs will always work. It just depends on how much time and effort you're going to put into your PBNs as to whether they work or not. So there's no shortcut anymore. Again, years ago, grabbing an expired domain name, slapping up something, you know, that would have worked. But as time evolves, Google are looking at slightly different, you know, different angles and all that kind of stuff. And I do believe that traffic and all that are put into taken into play. I also think that the number of outbound links, I think it's very easy for Google to say, right, that's clearly a PBN. You know, that they're getting, you know, 10,000 bloody outbound links a day. It's very easy for people to see that pattern. So, you know, that's a public blog network, not private blog network. So that works, and the other one doesn't. And that's where you've always got a certain element of people who say PBNs are the best things in sliced bread, and then you've got other people saying, oh, I've tried them and they don't work, they're garbage, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
that's how you approach it.
It's lack of understanding, of the in-depth things where how the internet works and how Google works and all that kind of stuff, and understanding that Google are just clever now and they can spot this garbage a mile away, and what worked 5 years ago no longer works. You've just got to put more time, more effort, more money in, and you can be successful. So they definitely do work if you treat them like any other website. Because I've, again, heard a lot of people saying, oh, I hide my PBNs from the Ahrefs bot and the SEMrush bot and all that kind of stuff. Why do you need to hide them? Like, if they're treated as real websites and they're real affiliate websites, Why are you hiding them? Now, you Adam, you'll have a whole bunch of websites there. Digital assets is what I would call them. Now, are they going to get wiped out because you own 10, 20, 30 websites? Absolutely not. If you're giving them all content, different links and everything else and spending time on them, that's it. And that is your network of websites. Call it your PBN, call it whatever you want. It's your network of websites. End of story. And that's it. You're treating them like real websites, and that could effectively, I'm pretty sure you probably have cross-linked a few of your own websites in the past. Why wouldn't you? Obviously, yeah, it's again just ignorance from certain people who think they test a lot of stuff, but they don't understand how the internet actually works. You need to dig a little bit deeper. It's not as easy as a lot of these guys make out. Slap up this and do that. And obviously I know you've got a question about expired domains and all that kind of stuff, and we'll talk more about why sometimes that works, why sometimes it doesn't. So we'll go into that in a bit more detail, which is kind of going to fall back into the PBN question as well in terms of how you do it properly.
Okay. Well, I think the big takeaway from that is basically to treat them as real websites, and then they work. We keep coming back to this thing, which is basically just don't take shortcuts. Take shortcuts. This stuff. Okay, interesting. Well, yeah, you mentioned expired domains there. I know, you know, you've done a lot of work with expired domains and stuff. Before I ask you any questions about it, I want to ask you about your nigelfarragemp.co.uk domain, just because I know you bought that when it expired, and then you've had some kind of backlash, and now you're wondering, do you give it back? Like, for people who have not heard the story, like, it's a good story. Do you want to just fill us in a little bit?
So, I got this domain name, nigelfarragemp.co.uk, when he was probably at the peak of his powers in terms of the whole Brexit thing and all that. Now, understanding and having spoken to Nigel and his team, they had a guy that was looking after the website that they fell out with, and the guy just buggered off and the domain expired. Now, because that domain had backlinks from pretty much every editorial in the world, American press, BBC, The Telegraph, everything, you know, as an SEO looking at that, you're just like, whoa, this has got some stuff. So, of course, I'm going to grab it. Now, the reason I grabbed it, now, if anyone watches or has watched any of my talks over the last few years, you see that I've spoken about this multiple times, you know, over 2018, 2019 and all that. Now, at the end of 2020, Nigel was kind of irrelevant at that point. Yeah. So I decided to release this story to the paper because no one knew who owned Nigel Farage other than if you were watching my conferences. And done it to the paper just for some PR, bit of publicity and all that. More backlinks. done that and got a backlash. You know, his fans were all calling me names and emailing me and all of this stuff. And one of Nigel's team phoned me, and the guy was like, like what you've done there. He says, we've spent thousands on lawyers trying to fucking track this down, and we couldn't find it over the last few years and all that stuff. He says, how about giving it back? And I'm like, listen, I could give it back, but it's got to be worth my while. I want some more PR out of this. So we left it at that, and then recently, the last few days, I think the website's been getting some complaints for some of the content that's on there. Now, I put exactly what Nigel Farage had on his website previously on there, and so there's nothing I put on there. You know, I wouldn't. He's a politician. You can get into a lot of trouble for mimicking him or whatever. So I just put it up, revived the traffic. You know, the website probably gets about between 10,000 and 20,000 hits a month if you look at Ahrefs. And, you know, I didn't really use it as a PBN or anything. It was more of a fun story to tell and explain the reasons why you would utilise an expired domain name. I just felt there was a gap there where I could say, look at all the press links. Here's a website. Yeah. You know, I can't really make it an Amazon affiliate website or anything. You know, who the hell's going to, you know, what are you supposed to do with a personal branded domain? So I've done that, and obviously Nigel's now asking for it back. He thinks I'm going to give it back for free, which I'm not. You know, I'm definitely not giving it back for free. And so, you know, that's the story in a nutshell. I will give it back. I don't want to do anything to publicly harm the guy or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But it has to be worth my while, whether that's more PR or more something else. I don't know. Necessarily doesn't have to be cash. But, you know, that's where I'm at with that. And as I say, just grabbed it and repurposed what was there, the exact same URLs. Revived all the old links that were pointing at it, and boom, the traffic comes up and ranks very well for his name. Now, on top of that, the problem you've got is if you Google Nigel Farage and look at the knowledge panel, it's the main website on there is the website that I own, Nigel Farage MEP. Now, I was able to claim that knowledge panel because I owned the domain name. So I pretty much own Nigel Farage's knowledge panel. As well, just because I own the domain name. So I was able to verify it by adding a tag to the domain name and all that. So, you know, he can't then go in and remove that to his new website and stuff like that. So, again, I wanted to do it to highlight the risks of you potentially losing it. Years ago, I bought a domain name from, it was a bus company's domain, and grabbed it, and it was really powerful, really old. And the guy wrote me a letter, and he's like, listen, Craig, I am absolutely mortified that my web team have let this go. Name your price, and I'll give you it. He says, I've had this for X amount of years, and, you know, it's my business domain name. I gave it to the guy for free. You know, I'm not likely to sabotage his business. But I think it's important to highlight that you have to renew your domain names, because if not, and it gets into someone else's hands, you're fucked. You know, Google lost their own domain name. I'm pretty sure many other big companies have, and they've had to literally pay millions of pounds to get them back. Now, I'm not going to extort anyone or blackmail them or anything like that. But, again, it was just more of a case study with the Nigel Farage one. And, yeah, it was a bit of fun. And, as I say, I took a lot of shit for it. But, again, it wasn't me to be malicious. I wanted a bit of PR. I wanted some backlinks, and I got the Daily Mail and a few other press links from it, and they obviously educated a lot of people on that side of things. So that was job done for me.
I bought a domain going back about 2 years ago now, and it looked like it was two businesses. One had bought the other one, and they were merging together, and they just not renewed one of the domains. And I bought it at auction. It was like $1,600 or something. And then they reached out and said, "Oh, we want our domain back. It's ours. We just bought this business." I said, "Okay, well, you can have it back for what I paid for it, $1,600." And the guy kicked right off. "No way. It would only cost you $15 to buy it." And I was like, "No, that's not how it works. Like, it doesn't." And I showed him the receipt and things like that. And he said, "Oh, well, no, we don't want it. Not for that price. Keep it." I
was like, on that story, a lot of people think I get Nigel Farage's domain for $10. I didn't. It wasn't me personally who caught the domain name. There's something out there called a drop catcher who knows the value of that domain name. So I certainly didn't pay 10 quid or whatever for it either. I paid a fair few quid for it, but it was worth it for that, just that story alone. So, certainly not 10 quid that I paid for it. But people I'll give you the new fee.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, I put up the question, should I give him it back, should I not?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not fucking handing it back. And his team are messaging me to, like, just hand it over. There's the IPS tag. And I'm like, dude, like, no way. And they offered me a tweet, actually. They said, Nigel will give you a tweet if you give it back. And I'm just, I don't want a tweet from Nigel, man. I've already had enough abuse off his fans, no more. So the tweet wasn't enough to encourage me to give it back yet. So I'll sit on it until I get what I want.
Well, these guys, they came back then about 8 months later. And by this point now, I turned it into a proper site and I'd spent time and content. And they were like, "We changed our mind. We want to buy it back now. So, like, where do we send this $1,600 to?" I was like, it's not $1,600 anymore. The site's making money and it's now $20,000, like. And they were like, "Wow, this is crazy. I know it." I'm like, "That's what it's worth. If I was to sell it in the open market, like, that's what I would be selling for." And again, they threw the toys at the prow. "This is rubbish. No, we don't want it." And I still got the site. Like, they don't want it. So
they think you're just one of those guys that are trying to blackmail or whatever. They don't understand, like, how this game works. And you know, I get from their point of view, they'll probably be like, "This guy's fucking at it. You know, £1,600 now, he's wanting $20,000. Like, what the hell?" But if that's what it's worth to you and stuff like that, yeah, then that's it. They've got to pay the gold rate for
it. That's just what it's based off on revenue. Like that was just the monthly revenue and at a 30x multiple back then. I was sell it all day long for that. So yeah.
Oh. Madness.
So when you obviously Nigel Farage is a bit different, but when you work with expired domains, do you have a specific process? Everyone seems to have their own slightly unique way of building on an expired domain. Can you share your top level process of what that looks like?
Right. So this is where again it goes wrong with a lot of people with expired domains. I have had so many people come to me saying, "Craig, I bought this expired domain, forwarded it on to this new website and all that kind of stuff. And jack shit happened. Now, I don't expect nothing to happen, because what happens with an expired domain name is it expires, you know, you've got that 60-day period where it's got a holding page up and all that stuff. Then it drops to the open market after day 64 or whatever it is. Now, in that whole time, everything starts to drop out of Google's index. Now, if, for example, I go to Ahrefs, and I look at Nigel Farage, we'll just use that as an example, and I look at the links that are going from the Daily Telegraph and all, the BBC and everything else, some of them are pointing to internal pages on his website. Now, unless that internal page is repurposed exactly as it was, then that link on the BBC or whatever it's going to be ain't going to be live again. You need, for this stuff to work, you need the link that, you know, from the BBC or whatever it was to work again. And it needs to be crawled, it needs to be indexed, your URL needs to be indexed. And that way, that link is then passing you value again. Boom! You know, your traffic starts to come up if you do that whole process. Now, a lot of people don't understand that part and do redirect right away. So, as far as I'm concerned, regardless of whether I'm going to redirect it in the end or build a website out on it, that process has to happen. It doesn't have to be the same template, but the same bloody URL structure is so important. Does it have to be the same content? Most times I just put the same content up, but does it have to be? Absolutely not. You can change it, you can add to it, you can tweak it. As long as that URL is the same and that link is active, then it's going to pass power from the BBC to you or any other source that, you know, that was going on. Now, what you also need to look out for, and a lot of people do this in the SEO world, they will go to the Wayback Machine, they will look for expired domain names, and they'll just take the content off of them when they drop out of Google's index, slap them on another website, and get rankings for that content. Now, if you then revive an expired domain name and slap up content that someone else is getting credit for, your stuff's not going to get in the index, and you are not going to get the value from that link from the BBC or whatever it's going to be if it's not in the index. So you need your expired domain name and all those old URLs to get in the index one way or the other, regardless of what you do, to get that backlink profile back to life again. And then from there, you can build the website out, or from there, you can then do individual redirects. So if the BBC links to nigelfaragemep.co.uk/Nigel, that's where the BBC links to, then regardless of what I do, if I just do a domain redirect further down the line from nigelfaragemep.co.uk over to my new website, that BBC link's going to die, because the redirect, you don't have access to the BBC to do the redirect. So you need to redirect specifically from nigelfaragemep.co.uk/Nigel over to where you want that link to go to. And that is the bare basics of SEO. That is the bare basics of how you get an expired domain to work. You need to revive it, bring it back to life, and then you decide whether you're going to build a money website on it. Now, I would also say, and I'm not sure if you agree with this, Adam, 9 times out of 10, when I get an expired domain name, I would build an asset out on it. I don't want to just do a redirect, unless it was for, I got something powerful and I was, you know, rebranding it or whatever. Then, of course, I would have to consider that. But that's a wasted opportunity. I want to revive that thing, make it a money website, do another. So, you know, for me, it's a bit of a wasted opportunity because the question here is, does grabbing an expired domain name and doing a redirect pass the full amount of power? I would say absolutely not. You're going to lose some of that power. How much of it is anyone's guess? But 9 times out of 10, I would build something out on the expired domain name rather than do a redirect. That's just my personal choice. That's what I believe works better. But as I say, again, you need to dig a bit deeper than just grabbing an expired domain name. You need to understand, again, how the internet works, how the link works, how redirects work, and all of that stuff. And if you don't, then you're just not going to get the results. And that's, again, where one part of the world will say expired domains don't work anymore. Yes, they do, if you do them properly. So so that's part of the process. And you know, part of that process is also checking whether that content's been stolen by someone else, because there's tools out there that you can go back and grab stuff from the Wayback Machine. You know, it's very common practice for affiliate marketers who want series volume to just go to the Wayback Machine, find some content from something that's expired and just fill their boots with thousands of pages. And that's it. You know, I know someone when Toys R Us went bust, when Toys R Us dropped out the index, they went and stole all of their content, which was built up over a 15-year period, and made a fortune selling kids' toys through Amazon affiliates. So, you know, when you see things like that, that's an opportunity for somebody like me who understands how the internet works. That drops, that's dropping out the index. Yeah. Keep watching it, steal. And there's probably 10 other guys trying to do the fucking same thing. So, you know, you've just got to be in there sharp, quick, because if you don't, someone will beat you to it.
I saw that recently. I was looking at a domain. I was looking at it in Wayback, doing like our evaluation process. And I Googled the brand name. And literally on one tab, it had the old website on Wayback. And the first result on Google was a fresh domain with the exact same website. And it hadn't been, like the front page, it still had, like said, talked about 2012 on there. And I'm like, this is exactly the same. And I put into Ahrefs, it's getting like 3,000 visits a month. It's not a massive amount, but all they've done is just taken that download from Wayback and upload it onto a fresh domain, and that's all they've done with it. And,
yeah,
you haven't even bothered to change the date. It's still talking about 8, 9 years ago on the homepage.
Yeah,
but that's the first time I've actually seen like a whole. I've seen people take content. But that's the first time I've seen someone take a whole site and recreate it on a fresh domain. I thought that was crazy.
Yeah, but that's just someone sloppy that's probably grabbed that and they'll maybe come back to it in a couple of years' time. Just That also happens as well. I know guys that have got outrageous amounts of domain names and they end up forgetting about them and not doing anything with them. So, and I'm one of those guys as well, by the way. Not criticizing other people. I have so many unfinished projects, you know, just done the first part of the process and then something else has come up and they've been completely forgotten about. But I'm pretty sure we're all guilty of that.
Yeah. Well, one thing which I do want to ask is, and I think I already know the answer based on the answers you've given on the other stuff, is do you think Google will ever be able to spot people repurposing these kinds of domains? And I'm going to predict what you're going to say. You're either going to say if you do it right, no, and if you do it sloppy and wrong, then yeah.
I think Google will, you know, see the exact same URL structure. You know, I think they can probably already detect what you're doing. It's whether or not they can't really make massive changes to their whole system to incorporate that. Do they care enough? Or, you know, is there a way where I'm just not sure. I believe that Google are clever enough to probably spot that quite easily. And whether it will ever become a thing where they penalise you for it or just discount it, I'm not sure if that's possible. So, you know, I know just now it works. But I think if Google want to kind of clean up the internet and the way someone mentioned it to me a few weeks ago, Google have so many pages that are added to the internet on a daily basis that they're having to pay for that storage, that server space for all of this stuff to be in the index. They're looking for ways to clean out garbage. You know, that's why you see crappy domain names with the wrong intent and no calls to action and all that kind of stuff, you know. People go, oh, why is my website being hit? Well, it's just a piece of shit. You know, work on it and you know, it's not going to get hit. And I think, you know, eventually Google could potentially look at that and look at that as a way of cleaning up the internet, you know, just saying you bastards have to actually provide your own content. But for now, it's a loophole that works, and I'm not sure that will change. Do Google really want that to change? Do they want more websites? Do they want more traffic? Do they want people to make more money online? Because essentially, if you're making money online, you're helping Google in some way by potentially ploughing that into AdWords. So I think Google know a lot more than they probably take action on, but you know, there's certain things I'm pretty sure they do know, and they just sweep it under the carpet, because why? Why would you kick off about it if, you know, they're a business at the end of the day, and that's it?
Also, I guess there's a ton of legitimate reasons this happens. Like you say, Google lost one of their old domains recently. Imagine if they were to reset the power of domains that expired or got dropped. I mean, would they reset the power of their own domains, or legitimate businesses who accidentally, you know, don't renew and then get the domain back somehow and have to start again? Like, would they ever do that?
What I'd also say, Google have got to... So on that particular thing you just said there, Adam, how many people actually know SEO that well and understand the internet that well? Not many. So it's probably an easier decision in their boardroom when they're having that meeting. Do we reset domains when they expire or not? They're going to say, like, there's probably, 20,000 SEOs probably worldwide, if that, that know, actually know what they're doing. There's fucking X amount of billion people in the world who have no fucking clue. So what do we do here? Fuckers, tails in the foot for 20,000 guys who are all going to continue to make money one way or another, because they'll figure out another way. Or fuck ourselves. You know, that's the way you have to look at it, in my opinion. You know, and I'm saying 20,000, that might be me being very, very generous. You know, I've spoke to many people out there, you know, across the world, and I would say, you know, 95% of people I come across, they do know bits of SEO, but I wouldn't consider them to be, you know, full superstar SEOs or anything like that.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Okay, well, Craig, this has been great. Like, I really appreciate you sharing everything that you've shared. The insights you provided today are great, and I think our audience is going to love them, because it's, we don't normally talk about this kind of, like, this kind of the side of things. Thank you. What other cool things are you working on? Like, have you got anything planned over the next couple of months? Are you just concentrating on your YouTube channel? Is that where, like, the best place people should reach out and follow you and get in touch and stuff?
Yeah, so my YouTube channel is where I do two live Q&As per week, where you can ask anything, whether it's how do you buy a domain name or whatever. Whatever you want to ask, you can ask on there. Those shows are designed for beginners to ask stuff, but we do have more up-to-date tutorials on there as well. You know, if I'm doing CTR manipulation or whatever, which you mentioned to me earlier, you know, about the 20 phones, you know, once I've done enough testing, I'm going to, you know, show the results of that as well. And again, that is where you can find out, you know, what worked for me, what didn't, you know, and whatever. I'm just trying to mess around and see what works, what doesn't. And I will post a kind of case study on that. So I try and do a lot of over-the-shoulder tutorials. I'm not trying to sell to people. I don't particularly want to sit and waffle for too long. I try and make my videos short, sharp, and to the point. You know, if it's going to be about how do you steal an unverified GMB, then it's going to show you how to steal an unverified GMB. You know, it's not going to talk. I'm not going to be sitting here telling you what I fucking had for breakfast and all that stuff. You know, I hate videos like that myself. So I think YouTube is probably the best way you're going to get information. You can check my blog, CraigCampbellSEO.com, and, you know, you can check my social medias and stuff from there as well. But, you know, all probably funnels back into YouTube. I think for me personally, I've always been a visual learner, and I like watching videos, and I consume an outrageous amount of content. I don't like reading blogs. I do not like listening to podcasts personally. I would rather watch a video of someone doing it. That's my preferred method, and that's why I focus, you know, a lot of my time and effort on YouTube, because I think a lot of people are more visual learners than, you know, and I get, listen, podcasts are great, people listen to them in their ears, but my attention span is so low that, you know, podcasts and reading books or, you know, PDFs or whatever people are putting out there, not my thing. Although I've been in a lot of podcasts, and I've got a podcast myself, Would I sit and listen to it for X amount of time? Probably not. You know, I think that's no, but you know what it's like, Adam.
Yeah,
you
know, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
After a while. That's why I think the YouTube short, sharp, to the point, bang, 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 and yeah. Show as much as I possibly can without getting myself thrown in jail or killed by Google. You've got to bear that in mind. So if you've got any weird questions you want to ask, I'm happy to answer them like by DM or something. But certainly there's only so much I can give away in YouTube without fucking it up for the whole world as well, because a lot of people make money using a lot of the tricks and all that stuff. And again, I've got to consider that and not piss in everyone's conflicts, basically. So,
I think one thing to mention that's important is your YouTube channel is not just a channel, it's a community, right? You invite people to ask you lots of questions, and you build it's a proper community. It's not just you are giving out information. There's no feedback or anything.
Yeah,
you want to know what people want you to talk about, and you want to know what questions they have and what kind of content they're interested in. So, you know, it's not just a one way street. It's definitely a give and take with your channel, I think.
Oh, 100%. You know, I've had people in the past, you know, message me saying, could you make a video this? Could you make a video on that? And of course, if I've not covered it, I will do it again. If I've not covered it, I will do it. You know, the same where I mentioned to you previous to the show, I always bring out a course in Black Friday. I am not sure what I'm going to bring out in Black Friday this year, which is in November. But if you guys listening have something that you feel I've got to offer that's not on the market, do shoot me a message. I'm looking for ideas on what to release. I don't want to do another affiliate marketing, you know, course. I've spoken enough about affiliate marketing on my YouTube channel and at various events. I want to do something different. And whether that's how to cheat online or whatever, I don't know. The problem I've got is I don't know what you guys don't know. And you know, when I'm speaking to people, you know, I could be saying things here, you know, stealing GMBs, and you're like, what's that even mean? You get that as well. You know, I find that fairly basic knowledge, but other people are like, what, you can steal someone's GMB? So again, you know, if someone wants more in-depth details on things like that, then again, that's something I can consider, you know, a playlist on YouTube or whatever. So, you know, it's not necessarily for me to make loads of money on, but I've got a few interesting things personally. Going to speak in America and stuff as well. America, Mexico, and Poland in September. Will make a course for November for Black Friday, but that's it. And just continue with the YouTube stuff and see what else comes up. If any other kind of opportunities or websites come up, I'm pretty sure I'll be continuing to launch a few websites and continue doing that as well.
Awesome. No, Craig, it's been great. I really appreciate your time today. Thank you very much. It's been awesome. I personally enjoyed it, and our audience will as well, I think.
Appreciate it, Adam. And thank you for having me.
Awesome. Thanks, Craig. Cheers, man. Speak to you soon.
Cheers.
Thanks again for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. If you're listening to the podcast version of this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please rate and review, as this will allow us to grow our audience and create more shows like this one. If you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe to the channel and click on the bell to be the first to know about any new episodes that we release. Until the next episode, goodbye.